Hi, everybody. It's Richard Zwicky with the Green Peak. And joining us this week, we have Alizia Ratliff, who is with Victus Consulting out of the UK right now. But I think Victus is also in the US quite a bit. Welcome, Alizia.
Hi, Richard. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate joining you and the Green Peak audience today.
Yeah, thanks. You know, your path to joining us on the Green Peak is quite interesting. We have a lot of different conversations with a lot of different people. And in your case, I saw a post from you in LinkedIn that caught my interest. And then as I reached out to you and discovered how you'd come to evolve in the cannabis industry and, you know, where your market had developed, business had developed, it was a really interesting story there. Not the same as a lot of other people, but a lot of overlaps and some unusual experiences along the way, which is, you know, just worth sharing. But, you know, you're in the UK now, you were working in the US. Tell us a bit about the journey.
Sure. So just to give you a bit of background about myself, I am a degreed chemist and I hold licenses in project management and supply chain management. So I have over 10 years of experience of being in traditional laboratories, working in laboratories where, you know, they're highly certified and I have to run through audits and inspections and extremely nerdy.
The way things should be done.
Yes, the way things should be done.
Health or wellness business.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But I did find that, you know, it became a job for me and I was looking for something a little bit more meaningful. With the encouragement of my husband, I was able to jump into the cannabis industry in Florida quite early on when one of the earliest licensees had won their license to produce. So that kind of brought me into the cannabis space. I got started with, you know, being an integral part of startup teams where we basically took cannabis companies from conception and on paper and an idea into launching those operations, whether vertically, horizontally. That's something that I've now started to specialize in and really start to fuel my passions and also my husband's passions for being in the industry. And we started to see a gap that was in the industry for consultancies. There was a lot of consultants that I had worked with in the earlier years of my career that honestly just would give you a lot of jargon that you could find yourself on Google.
Some of the stories I've had with people in this industry as consultants, you know, who people think they're amazing and know so much. Mm-hmm. It's shocking how little or poor, or they just try and pull wool over people's eyes. Like I had one whose biggest point of feedback, or one of the big points of feedback, was the greenhouse is oriented 30 degrees different than it should be. Not understanding, you know, it's not like the sun goes over at the equator 24 hours a day and doesn't move around the sky. It's kind of like, what does it matter? Like there's ways to mitigate, but don't tell me that, you know, the biggest problem you can see is you could have changed the angle on a building by 30 degrees. I laugh at what some people do. And then believe them. They think they're authorities.
They do. They do. And, you know, honestly, part of my career has been being that subject matter expert in the company that's able to really, you know, showcase the BS that's coming out of some of these consultants groups and be able to really save the company money and time and effort by saying, no, this isn't right. This is how we should do it from, you know, a data driven perspective. That's one of the things I really love about my background and actually working in those laboratories, because it gave me so much to really help companies be a lot more dangerous to the consultants that just really don't know anything. So, you know, when my husband and I started Victus Consulting Ventures, it was for that reason, because, you know, he had about 14 years of experience in, you know, entrepreneurship, operations. He actually worked for one of the bases in Jacksonville, where he was selected to work for the presidential helicopter line, which was extremely exclusive. And he has a great keen eye on operations and supply chain management. And when you add that with what I was doing in the industry, as far as building out, you know, the infrastructure for these companies and how they'll grow, how they'll process, and, you know, coming from a scientific perspective of analysis and quality, it just made sense for us to, you know, incorporate. So we did. And here we are 2 years later, just really trying to navigate these murky waters that we call an industry.
Right. And, you know, that the industry itself is, it's made huge steps, but it's different in different areas of the world. And that was one of the things I thought your perspective would be really great, because, you know, you like Guy, but I have had to operate or dealt with the business in multiple geographies. And, you know, people think, well, at some point the US will export to the world and the world will export to the US. And, you know, it's not going to be that simple because right. there's so many different standards.
Right.
What are you seeing?
Oh, I completely agree with you. You know, I spent at least, you know, 5 years over in the U.S. and within the U.S. I've worked in quite a few markets, you know, medicinal, recreational markets and your hemp only or CBD based mm-hmm. markets. And there's that big difference of the fact that, you know, it's not federally legal. So it does create a bit of a complexity when it comes to just legislation across state lines.
Yep.
So there's that. And then you have each state that's, you know, dictating those regulations and what's considered the standard. And there is no like international standard like you see with normal manufacturing firms, your normal manufacturing firms and, you know, industries that have been going for decades, food and beverage, alcohol, tobacco. You have ISO 9000, you have ISO 22000 to really help drive the compliance of a company. But when it comes to cannabis, you just have like this smorgasbord of standards that you're pulling on.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, in 2020, I think it was, the standards in Europe for how CBD would be handled changed four times. It went to novel foods, it went to wellness, it went to prescription only, then it went, and that was just CBD. You know, and then it went back, and of course the UK went different than Europe in the end, which happens a lot. But you know, in the US, there's no concept of the standards that are being used internationally. And
right.
you know, you say, yeah, there isn't an ISO 9000, but there are ISOs for the labs and the like that people should be taking cues from and thinking about. Cannabis will go there. Why are we spending money on building a lab that would be obsolete next year next week even, if legalization status changes?
Right. No, I completely agree with you on that. And, you know, the sad part is this isn't a new industry for the United States anymore. I really hate hearing that when we come into conferences and people are talking about it being a startup industry or a burgeoning industry. It's been around for, you know, since 1996.
Oh, it's been around longer. It's just been gray market and black market, right?
Exactly.
And that's part of the craziness of this industry is it's always existed.
And exactly.
Some recognize just legalize it, get the tax revenue, which is, you know, part of the benefit, but get health standards in place.
Yes. There's so many things that you have to think about whenever you're producing something that's going to be ingested or consumed. Mm-hmm. You really have to think about that person. And, you know, for me, it was very personal. You know, my mother suffered from chronic pain and she became a patient in Florida.
Right.
And that was something that was a driving force for me just as a producer, like, okay, would I sell this to my mom?
Yes.
Would I allow her to consume this product if I knew pesticides were in it or mm-hmm. if I knew that they were laden with heavy metals? No, of course I wouldn't. So that was a huge driver for just keeping me in check. Not only that, but just the fact that, again, I came from traditional laboratories where you did not deviate from the standard. You never deviated from the quality piece, and you always made sure safety was the top priority in your facilities at all times.
You know, it's funny this comes up because just we had another guest on recently, Palin Wood Thurgood, who's doing a business, you know, very called Radical Sciences. And they're all about the testing, but they're about getting the documentation for how a particular formulation delivers value to a particular patient with a condition mm-hmm. so that it can be replicated. And one of the biggest problems that it starts as with everybody is what's in the cannabis? What is in the starting point? And, you know, it can't be cleaned out.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, unless you go to isolate and, you know, even then it's
exactly. But then you're losing quite a few benefits from the entourage effect of all of the major and minor cannabinoids working together in your system, as well as the terpenoids and the flavonoids. They're all mm-hmm. very important. And trying to standardize that medicine as a botanical extract, it is quite difficult. But I will say there's quite a bit of research going on, not only in North America, but Israel has been a front runner in research mm-hmm. and trying to really develop personalized drugs. Because that is something that's an issue, is the standardization and the repeatability of the medicine whenever you do have someone suffering from a debilitating disease.
Yes. And it's, you know, I mean, people who have been in the industry for a long time recognize, let's say, with a you know, some patients, there's a course of treatment because the body adapts. So you have to modify, and you have to understand how to modify to deal with their seizures, because there's going to be a progress and a cycle.
Right.
And,
exactly.
You know, that's the sort of thing where a lot of, you know, and it causes conniptions for physicians, because that's not standard practice in traditional medicine.
Right. No, I agree with you.
So we do have to take a quick break, but we're going to be back again with Alicia Ratliff from Victus Consulting. I'm Richard Zwicky on The Green Peak.
The Green Peak will climb back into your podcast player after we play some messages from our sponsors.
And we're back on The Green Peak with Alicia Ratliff. And Alicia, you know, one of the interesting things in our conversation before this call and this interview is, was your perspective on, you know, how, and it's not work conditions, but it's the way people are operating and treating people within the industry is varying around the world. You know, we're all supposed to be there. This is an industry which is born out of trying to do good, to help people. And yet, we don't always hold ourselves accountable to the same standards.
Right.
And I know I've seen it and been absolutely shocked, but you've had to experience some of it.
You know, it's definitely something that I've talked about in the past. And, you know, it's a touchy subject, but it's something that does need to be, you know, exposed. The industry for me, I think the biggest issue is the fact that there are a lot of people who are dictating how the industry is being run from a private sector with, you know, investment groups, you know, board of directors for different companies, and then your company executive leadership. A lot of those companies don't have diversity at the table when you're talking about the very tops of these companies. So when it comes to finding, you know, people who are subject matter experts in, you know, cultivation, extraction, business development, whatever it is, whatever your niche is, I'm finding that a lot of these companies are really baiting and trying to hook people in to a dream or to a vision that ends up fizzling and fading out within the first 6 months to a year, because their real intentions were to gain you on board as essentially a cheap consultant, have you help to build every part of their systems, their management programs, and their products, and then essentially kick you out the door because they think they have someone better placed to do that job, or someone cheaper, or someone who's in the family. It's a nasty practice where a lot of people are being used up for their IP. And unfortunately, they're not able to see the fruits of their labor with these companies. And I find that to be, I thought it was unique to my situation because, you know, I've unfortunately had to swim upstream a few times from leaving companies where that was their intentions. And I refuse to work for a company that has horrible intentions at heart when it comes to their employees or their consumers. But I'm noticing that this is something that's going on in the industry as a whole. You know, this is it's bad, and it's across the board with a lot of people. So me sharing my story and being able to say, hey, this happened to me, it helps me to understand that there's a lot of other people that it's happening to as well. There's quite a few talented folks that just really aren't able to utilize their talents because they're afraid. They're afraid of sharing ideas. They're afraid of sharing IP because it's just going to be stolen. Or they're afraid to jump ship from a company that's treating them bad or poor to another company in fears that it's just going to be happening all over again. So, I don't know how you fix it rapidly, but I do know that a lot of the issue comes from the top. And if you start to infuse good people at the top that have good intentions for why this industry was built in the first place, when you infuse those leadership teams with more diverse groups of people, you know, I'm a brown female who's young, sitting at the C-level, it's very difficult. There's not a lot of people in the conference room that look like me and can relate to me. So it's been a challenge, and I take a lot of life coaching and training from my husband in order to, you know, navigate meetings and how to really develop a business and be able to say, hey, I might be 35, but I've been there, done that. I've seen this, and this is what I have to contribute. And I am starting to make headway there, but I'm finding here in the UK, it isn't as different from the US, and that is sad.
It is sad, and you know that there's a lack of diversity, which, you know, I think a lot of people recognize, but a lot of people do nothing about, which is which is sad at every level. But there's also a lack of real social impact that the firms lose, don't, you know, they think they're starting off to do good to produce something for a patient's condition, and they lose it so quickly, but also don't recognize the impact they have on the community. Like, you know, when I built my company down in Colombia, part of our model and part of our, you know, for staffing, for supporting our team was, you know, how are we going to have a positive impact on them and their families beyond their wage? Right. And, you know, at a certain point, your boards and says, unfortunately, a lot of boards, and, you know, I've had to deal with this, they say, who cares?
Yeah.
And that's puts you in a horrible position, you know, where you're now at something so fundamental set apart from your board, and you're dealing with nonsense. And
right.
You know, you should look at people and wonder, how are you human when they, you know, when you're dealing with people this way?
Of course. And it can be deflating, but you know, it really has been something that has encouraged me to keep going. Mm-hmm. There's times where I really thought to myself, you know, you're a chemist, you're a project manager, you can go into whatever industry you want to, why continue to go and essentially beat your head upside a brick wall? But I continue to, because, you know, one, I feel like I have a social responsibility to a lot of the people who, you know, aren't at an executive level or even in mid-management, who are looking up to someone like me, who are looking at me and saying, you know what, she has courage and she's continuing to, you know, try. And I want to inspire more triers. I want to inspire people who are extremely knowledgeable in the field, and they come in with a lot of cards to deal in the deck. That's one of the reasons why, you know, my husband and I, we partner with quite a few universities. We partner with Cornell frequently, to where we do lectures, guest lectures, where we're trying to teach and educate the next generation of scientists and cultivators. We've been invited to do a presentation with the USDA to talk about sustainable cultivation and things like that. So there's just so many different avenues that we can really impact, you know, positive change and be able to raise that awareness.
And, you know, the irony is you're approaching all the information from a scientific perspective. You're speaking to a lot of people who are scientists. Science is blind. It doesn't care. Why are people interpreting things differently? That's what I always shake my head and wonder, what is wrong with people?
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, we all bleed. We all bleed the same. We all get hurt the same. You know, what's wrong with people? But, you know, it's a challenge throughout, but, you know, it's that change is also an opportunity, and it's an mm-hmm. amazing opportunity this industry has, because, you know, like you say, it's not a brand new industry, but it is still very much in its infancy relative mm-hmm. to so many others. I mean, you know, I went through the tech boom, and, you know, I rode and had some great rides with a couple of companies, and in so many ways, this industry has felt like it. It's been a bit of the Wild West that seems to be tapering down, or has tapered down, mm-hmm. but there's still mm-hmm. a lot of it as new markets come on. But those are opportunities for positive change.
Absolutely. And absolutely.
I'm hopeful.
Yeah. You know, that's one of the reasons why I'm here in the UK. I think that, you know, the industry is booming. And like you said, it is starting to, you know, simmer down over in the States. You're going to have a lot more regulation and standards and inspections that are going to be happening to really weed out a lot of the bad players. And I am hopeful in that. And just talking about some of the differences globally to the U.S., you know, you have a lot of movement that's going on in Mexico. That's a burgeoning, you know, market. You've got the Caribbean. You've got what's going on in LATAM. Panama just announced their legislation for medicinal cannabis that'll be rolling out. So you have quite a bit of growth that's happening. You have Colombia, Germany. They're not only prescribing medicinal cannabis, but they're now allowing for medical insurance providers to cover that. That's huge, because the cost implications mm-hmm. of the medicine has been, you know, that's a whole nother talk that we can have. You have the European market that's now starting to pick up. You've got Portugal, Spain now starting to compete with the Netherlands on cultivation. Mm-hmm. You have Malta and Luxembourg, who have legalized grow and use for personal reasons. So there's a lot of movement in this industry that is now starting to pop up around the globe. And this is going to give so many people opportunities outside of their comfort zone to be able to look to new, you know, new places, new markets, just new opportunities. communities as a whole to be able to utilize their great talents that are just being underutilized from terrible companies.
Well, there is. And, you know, I mean, there's hope. But on that note of hope, we do have to take a quick break, but I want to come back to it in just a minute. We're on the line with Alicia Ratliff with Victus Consulting. I'm Richard Zwicky on The Green Peak.
The Green Peak will climb back into your podcast player after we play some messages from our sponsors.
And we're back on The Green Peak with Alicia Ratliff. And Alicia, just before the break, you know, we actually opened up a little bit about Europe and how some markets are opening and the opportunity around that, which is just, it's huge. And it can't be underestimated because the European market is larger than the American market. And it's less fragmented, but it's fragmented across countries. Now, one of the things that's held back the market there is a lack of standardized regulations. There's been changes, but there's also been problems like with the physician community in Germany. There was a great demand to write prescriptions, but then the medical board started asking the doctors to document why, so that they could build documentation about how to use cannabis. But the net effect was doctors stopped wanting to write prescriptions because they didn't want to take time away from seeing patients to write documents.
Sure, sure. Honestly, I'm just going to blow that one wide open. Doctors may have been hesitant to write prescriptions because honestly, they just don't know. They don't really understand the science. They don't understand the data. They don't understand, you know, what 10 grams of high THC, 22% will do for someone.
They know it works, but they don't understand
exactly
how.
Exactly. So I think that that's one of the challenges. You know, that's something that was a huge difference I noticed coming into the UK than from the US. Myself, I'm a patient for chronic pain. And one of the things that I noticed is the lack of access at the national level when it comes to the NHS being able to prescribe medicinal cannabis. There's a huge hesitancy there. So you have a lot of patients who have to seek private physicians to be able to get their access to their medicine. And when you're talking about private physicians, now that cost implication is increasing, it's rising. On top of what you already have to pay for a prescription. And when you look at the quality of flower or, you know, oils or whatever it is that you're using, as that quality increases, the price point increases as well. So it's extremely expensive when you're talking about the model that a lot of the UK and the European countries are going after with the prescriptions of medicinal cannabis. You know, one of the things that the US is, I think, doing right is they're leaving that to the individual. They're leaving that to the patient to actually really self, you know, prescribe what they think they need at the dispensary level. Some people find this to be dangerous, but I think it's extremely powerful because
there's both sides to it, right? I can understand where, you know, for certain conditions, you really need guidance. In other cases, you have the experience already, so you know what to do. I think for neophyte, it's a problem. For somebody who's experienced, it's not.
Exactly. And, you know, at least for me, it's a journey. I had to find what works for me. You know, I use my brain at a very high level throughout the day. If I'm experiencing a really bad, you know, day from, I have radiculopathy from a car accident 17 years ago that unfortunately I'll deal with for the rest of my life. And some days I wake up and I feel as if I'm as stiff as a surfboard and I can barely get out of bed. And, you know, I still have to be able to make it into meetings and speak on scientific data and things like that. So I find for me, CBD oil works in the daytime. And if I need something a little heavier, then I can use that at night. But that has been a journey of experiencing different form factors and experiencing different formulations to be able to come to that conclusion on my own. Here in the UK, that wouldn't be the case. Most of the time, the doctors will prescribe CBD oil for 60 days first. If that doesn't work for you, then they give you a very small dose of high THC, and then they increase that over time. So for someone who's dealing with, you know, fibromyalgia or something like that, that model doesn't necessarily work for them. They may need something that's, you know, 25% THC, maybe 3% CBD from the get-go.
Right.
But they don't have that option. And, you know, that's been something that's, you know, spawned protests here in the UK with Parliament and trying to really expand the legislation here. I do think in the next couple of years, they're going to start to expand. They have a new minister that's going to be overlooking the sector. So there's a lot more people that they're starting to put in on board. You have the ACI and the CMC. They're doing work as far as showing data and proving, you know, the effectiveness and the efficacy of cannabis. We did have a small win where the THC limit was increased from 0.2 to 0.3% in CBD products. So that's, you know, again, small win, but it is movement.
I know, and progress. It's so slow sometimes. I know I presented to and then consulted to the health commission in the UK that was dealing with the issue back in 2018. And I'm shocked at how slow the progress has been. But, you know, at least they're moving forward and, you know, not stuck, but it's just too slow so often.
It's really slow. And, you know, to be honest, that kind of brings me to, you know, what U.S. firms could expect if they're looking for global expansion. And, mm-hmm. you know, one of those things is the fact that a lot of these markets are, the entry requirements are steep. They're through the roof. And if you're thinking of starting from scratch or from the ground floor. So a lot of people have started to look towards the, you know, partnership route or M&A activity to where you can acquire or merge with a company that's already here, boots on the ground, have already gone through a lot of the regulatory hoops to, you know, get started. That's what Curaleaf did last year. Yep. You know, Curaleaf put in a large acquisition of EMAC, which was mm-hmm. one of the longest cultivators in Portugal. That makes sense. And that's off of the back of the model that Aurora and Tilray did when they were coming into the European market several years ago. So I think that's going to be a big point for U.S. firms to really look at. If they're going to expand, they're going to have to look at some companies that are already boots on the ground, who have those relationships in place with the regulatory agencies to be able to move forward. And then also looking at the standards, if you're looking at exporting your product into European markets or even the UK, you're going to have to raise your level of standard.
And that's funny because that's one I keep dealing with. You know, companies call me, they ask me to give some consulting, they want to break into the such and such market, and they don't realize they have to change their entire, really anything they're producing that's going to be exporting,
yeah. but yes.
probably it's best to change their entire operation to the higher standard, because even though it's there, it's coming here.
Yes, exactly. And you know, it's trickling in little by little. I unfortunately went on an interview one time where I absolutely did not take the job, where the general manager told me that his idea of compliance was flying as low as possible until he had to raise the bar. And that is just, it's a sickness.
Can you imagine what is going out the door in that situation?
I know. I couldn't imagine. And I just would not be a part of something like that. But just imagine how many companies, that's their motto. Yeah. That's what they're doing to quote unquote save money. But you know, it's not gonna fly for these next few years. You know,
those are the companies that'll be wiped out probably when legalization exactly. actually happens, because they're not ready. And yes. that's one that, you know, I keep, and you know, you're dealing with it as well from a consulting perspective, as am I, helping companies get ready, because you don't know what you don't know. And we
exactly.
can talk about it for 30 minutes here, but we're not scratching the surface.
Oh yeah, it's absolutely true. I always tell clients that the three, you know, most value added activities that you can invest your funds in are going to be, one, your equipment. Because that's going to tick the boxes for standard or for standardization of product, but also for compliance. Mm-hmm. You have to invest in your people. You really mm-hmm. do. I don't know why people, you know, try to shortchange the experts. You have to invest in your people, and you will see the returns tenfold, 20-fold. You know, people are really dedicated to a story, yep. and they stay loyal to companies that recognize and really increase them. So you have to do that. And you also have to invest in your compliance strategy. Mm-hmm. That is huge. If you do not have a compliance strategy to hit, you know, 21 CFR 210 to 11 EU GMP standards, then you will be left behind when this industry is commoditized. You
yes.
will.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, there's such a myriad of applications, but, you know, companies that are going global, you know, you see a lot of them, you deal with a bunch of them. You know, I invite them to call, to reach out to you at, it's victus-vc.com, I believe it is.
Yes, victus-cv.com.
Oh,
you can also find us on LinkedIn. You can also find us on Instagram as well.
Yeah. And, you know, apart from companies that are looking to go global and international, what are other ones that are ideal to reach out to you?
You know, honestly, we, our ideal client is someone who has either, you know, I always say someone who has the license in hand and has the funding piece already in place, or at least has that strategy there, then it's great to engage us, because we're really good at the planning stages to really help you work through your business model, help you work through your plan, tell you where those potholes are so that you can avoid them completely and not have to worry about the constant remediation that some of these companies find themselves in within a year or two. Yeah. That really is our ideal candidate, but we take on people who also have an operation that's running and they're looking to grow and expand and just really don't know how to penetrate those markets. We also look at companies who are sinking and they need somebody to come in and really help turn them around.
Right. No, that's very good. It's kind of like, you know, the old aphorism, measure twice, cut once.
And, yeah.
That's what I always tell customers and, you know, groups I'm dealing with. Think of it the same way. But absolutely, we're out of time, unfortunately, Lisa, but you know, people who are interested in going global or looking at some of these compliance issues and some of the issues around standardization of the final product, or, you know, steps along the way, I invite you to reach out to Alesia through victus-cv.com. Great knowledge and information, and really, really good perspective. Alesia, thanks for joining us today. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you so much for having me, Richard. I really appreciate it. And I hope we can do this again soon.
I hope so. And thanks to everybody for listening. I'm Richard Zwicky of the Green Peak. We'll come visit you again soon.
The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.